the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back as we kick off the third and final hour of this Friday edition of Feedback, your on-air town square. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders along with Sean Tansky. Our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800 or toll-free 888-401-0459. And you can text us your opinion now, or in this case, your question to 484-650-3373. And our email address is feedback@830weeu.com. Well, if the conversation that Dr. Tim and I had during the news break is any indication, boy, we're heading for an interesting conversation today for this hour. The question that's before us now is the United States still a relevant player on the international stage? And I can't wait to hear what Dr. Blessing has to say. Tim, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Well, I'm glad to be here, Bill.
So we did a lot of talking during the news break there. So how do you want to start this? I mean, with give me a synopsis, if you will, of where the United States stands as far as being a world leader today.
Well, you know, we are still the most powerful military on the planet at this moment.
Okay.
Monetarily, we still have the largest economy, although that's a close thing. China, may have claimed that.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is almost all the indicators are going in the wrong direction. And what do I mean by indicators? Well, if we talk about industrial capacity, and I know that your listeners are just dying to hear about industrial capacity, but the industrial capacity of the United States, as we were talking about over the break here, we cannot produce enough war material to last 1 week in a war. We cannot. In fact, I checked this morning, we can produce quickly 3 days' worth of ammunition.
Oh, wow.
So our stocks have been drawn way down by trying to help Ukraine.
Mm-hmm, right.
And the thing is because we have deindustrialized, we are having a terrible time just keeping our stocks. That's our stocks of ammunition and other war material, up to snuff. We can't get back to where we were before the Ukraine war. We just simply don't have the capacity. At one time, we were the arsenal of democracy. Right now, I think, as I said to you, we aren't the arsenal of North Dakota.
Wow.
So we really have severe problems in terms of our military posture and our military capabilities at this point. Now, we have some very modern stuff on it. Don't get me wrong. We have some very modern stuff in the pipeline or stuff that actually is out there. But the reality is we don't have a lot of it because, remember, Donald Trump won Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania in 2016. What did he win it on? The fact that the jobs had been offshored. Where did they get offshored to? They got offshored to China. China has whatever you think of Xi, and frankly, I think he's a murderous thug. But whatever you think of Xi, he is a competent leader. Okay, he may not be a leader I would like to have,
mm-hmm.
But let's not deny his competence. And he has, through a series of programs, greatly increased China's capacity. And where he couldn't increase China's capacity, because there's some internal problems in China, where he couldn't increase China's capacity, he's been able to farm out his problems to other places. You know, Donald Trump's remark about a bloodbath in the car industry.
Right. Well,
he's right.
Mm-hmm.
China is helping Mexico. There's a program for this. It's called the Belt and Road Program. China is helping Mexico found its own car industry. The labor in Mexico is much less expensive than here in the United States. And as a result, if those car factories go up and we can't stop them from going up, the United Auto Workers are going to be in a terrible shape. You're not going to have jobs. Now, let's take it one step further. If you don't have an auto industry and something goes south on you and you need to get put up military affairs, if you don't have an auto industry, you can't build tanks. If you don't have an auto industry, you can't build personnel carriers. If you don't have an auto industry, you can't build Jeeps. And so what we're looking at is China is collapsing our military capability, not directly, but indirectly. And they're doing a pretty good job of it.
Is this one of the reasons why the Biden administration is very concerned about Japan buying U.S. steel?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we don't have a steel industry. I knew the HR manager for what at that time was the largest remaining steel industry in the United States, and they were buying what are called pocket plants because there's not enough demand in the United States for U.S. steel to keep a major steel plant open.
Wow.
You drive out to Pittsburgh, you're not going to see steel plants, mm-hmm. I can guarantee you. Mm-hmm. And there's no place in the country where you have anything beyond pocket-sized plants because we simply can't sell U.S. steel to U.S. customers. Mm-hmm. So we need customers overseas. Well, guess what? Why should they buy the U.S.'s expensive steel when China or other places, and I don't want to just focus on China here, but other places can make steel at half the price or a quarter of the price. So there's another problem here, which is we have not invested in the kind of activities which give you the makings for steel. That is, in order to make steel, you have to have coal. And there's some reasons for that. But you also have to have iron ore. Well, the Mesabi Range up in Michigan is pretty well played out, and we have not invested in creating new we have pockets of steel which we can use, pockets of iron we can use. Only thing is we can't use them, or we don't use them. Last time I was out at Bryce Canyon, and I'm a hiker, and you know I like to think I spend a lot of time in the environment, and I was at Bryce Canyon, and the park ranger there said, it's a wonderful thing. You know, they were going to build a coal mine. It's about maybe 50 miles from the from Bryce, but we were able to stop it. And I'm thinking, what's good about that? You know, because that makes us even more dependent upon other countries.
Mm-hmm, right.
And so, you know, for the listeners on the program here, you know, Bill and I aren't going to see, aren't going to be around for all of this, but your children and your grandchildren are going to be around for all of this. Mm-hmm. And so you really have a serious problem here. We simply don't produce enough. We don't come close to producing enough. Whether it's paper clips or whether it's Jeeps, we don't produce enough of it. And that's it. The collapse of the American industrial sector. Now, not every place. Let's be clear about that. It's not all of American industry has collapsed, but the collapse of what you would call heavy industries.
Right.
And the fuel sources that fuel those heavy industries, we're looking at a flat-out disaster.
Well, we certainly had a wake-up call when the pandemic hit, and we had the supply chain shortage, one of the reasons being that a lot of our manufacturing went overseas,
yeah.
And our CEOs were all thinking just in time. That process right. of because of our computers and able to keep track of our inventory, we won't produce things and stockpile them up. We'll wait until we're in need of it.
Well, the economist in me, and I you know my master's was in economic history, the economist in me says, oh, yeah, this is how to do it. Because, you know, you have the kind of free trade where one country does one thing efficiently, mm-hmm, another country does another thing efficiently. That works very well.
Mm-hmm.
It works very well economically. But in terms of protecting yourself and our allies, it works terribly. And I think that's the wake-up call, is that, you know, when you remember the pictures from 2021 of ships being stacked 75 deep, mm-hmm, at San Diego.
Right.
Well, I mean, this is just a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, if you look at the numbers, we are not replacing the industries which have gone overseas or which have grown old and can no longer produce as they used to.
So on top of all this, you've got a strategic petroleum reserve that's been drastically lowered.
Right.
Now, the Biden administration is trying to resupply that, but we've got a ways to go to bring it back up to where it was. That, too, is causing a problem for us, is it not?
Well, the whole fuel infrastructure problem is a major one. Yes, you're right. They did, in order to bring gas prices down, they did drain the strategic reserve. And that's not as big as people think it is. But the thing
meaning,
is...
Meaning what, when you say it's not as big as...
Well, actually, we, as countries go, we actually have a small, or we had a relatively small strategic reserve. But the problem we're having in refilling it is the issuance of licenses. You have to get a license to drill in most places where you want to drill. And the Biden administration, you know, and I understand their concern here, does not want to fill, does not want to issue those licenses.
Right.
In large part due to environmental concerns.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're talking about the North Slope of Alaska, that's really fragile territory up there.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I used to live on the Gulf of Mexico, and if you get a rupture in one of those wells, you got problems.
Right.
So I understand their reluctance, but the long-term effect of this has been that anything that happens in the oil market is going to have a really serious ricochet effect here in the United States. Now, we have an abundance of natural gas, an absolute abundance. We have an abundance of oil, believe it or not. Not easy to get at, but it's there. But the problem is, of course, is that you're weighing environmental concerns versus military concerns here. And so different administrations over a period of time have generally favored the environmental concerns over that. Now, not all administrations, but I would say since Reagan, probably most.
Mm-hmm.
And the end result has just been that we, besides lacking iron and besides lacking steel and besides lacking transistors, microchips,
right,
which we were talking about over the break, you need rare earths for those. Well, who owns the rare earths? China and Turkey. Turkey is a member of NATO. But that's a matter of convenience, I suspect, on the part of the Turks.
Mm-hmm. Why do you say that? Why do you say that it's a matter of convenience for them?
Well, no matter what Turkey does, it always has Russia as a northern neighbor. So it needs the alliance with us in order to balance Russia.
Okay.
And so I don't think Turkey is going anywhere. But the flip side of that is Turkey is not exactly helping us in the Middle East. Why should it? And so it can just say, what conflict? I don't see any conflict.
Hmm.
And as a result, they are not committed to do anything for us. NATO is, I think, misunderstood. NATO is supposed to be a defensive pact,
right.
And it is.
Right.
And it is. NATO cannot, or pretty much cannot, go on the offensive. It's designed for defense.
Mm-hmm.
And the end result, therefore, is that we just simply, we don't have any pressure we can bring on Turkey. The only country that pressures Turkey is Russia, and that's the only reason why Turkey stays with us. And they do it kind of with both fingers on both hands crossed.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't, name for me a strong ally we have in the Middle East.
Wow.
You know, outside of Israel, you know, which...
Yeah, well, now that's coming into question,
isn't it? And there you have a problem, don't we?
Yeah, we do, which I want to get to a little bit later on. I want to get your take on Senate Majority Leader Schumer's comments about Israel on the Senate floor in a bit. But sticking with NATO for a moment, do the other NATO members really need the United States today, based on what you've just said about our lack of industrial power today and how long it would take us to rebuild our military presence? Are we really an important member anymore in NATO?
Well, yes, we are. We are an important member of NATO. But that's because that's how NATO is arranged. If right now we left NATO, so we would drop from 31 member states to 30. What would happen is that those 30 states would then begin to take responsibility for their own defense.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they would just simply rearrange it. We are not if we leave NATO, NATO does not fall apart. In fact, it may even grow stronger.
And that was where I was coming from with my question to you. But you look at Donald Trump, who has been threatening for quite a while to withdraw from NATO if the other countries don't build up their financial support for the group. Is that where you were coming from with your answer, that we're needed in NATO because of our political, our monetary contributions to that group?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't know to what degree NATO nations pay much attention to us, but they would have to spend, Germany would have to spend a lot more. And I understand Trump's criticism of Germany.
Mm-hmm.
He's right about that. But the reality is that the NATO nations, since you've got 30 of them now, and you may soon have some more coming aboard, the NATO nations would have to increase their spending somewhat. A nation like the United Kingdom, not that much. Germany would have to probably double its contribution. But some states in NATO are quite weak. Greeks coming immediately to mind. Their economy is a basket case. They can't spend more.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But what would happen Germany would simply take over Greece. I mean, it would remain as an independent country, but the orders would come from Berlin. So as a result, many of these NATO countries can't increase their spending. They simply don't have the economic base to do so.
Is Germany's situation because of World War II? Does it go back to that, or are there other aspects as to why Germany is not contributing as much as they should?
Since the days of, Konrad Adenauer, some of you may remember Konrad Adenauer, but West Germany did a very good job of rebuilding, and sometimes called the West German miracle.
Right.
And then you have Helmut Kohl, mm-hmm. followed by Angela Merkel,
mm-hmm.
and two very strong leaders, two very capable leaders, and they did a heck of a job of rebuilding Eastern Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Margaret Thatcher used to warn people before she got booted out by her own party, but Maggie Thatcher used to warn people that you can't let Germany reunite, because what's going to happen is Germany is going to dominate Europe, and that's what's happened.
Gotcha. Okay. So we've got a lot to talk about still on mm-hmm. this very interesting topic, and we will return in just a bit. My guest this morning is Dr. Timothy Blessing, a history professor with Alvernia University. And our numbers here, if you'd like to weigh in on the topic of conversation, 610-374-8800 or toll-free, 888-401-0459. Feedback returns in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Barnesville, Schuylkill Haven, Tremont, and all of Schuylkill County. This is News Talk 830, WEEU. And now back to Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback. My guest is Dr. Timothy Blessing. And the question before us today, is America still relevant in the international or on the international stage? Your questions are always welcome here at 610-374-8800 or toll-free, 888-401-0459. We've got a couple of people on the line now who have a question for you, Dr. Blessing, and we'll get to those in just a minute. So, folks, hang in there. But first, I want to get your take on something here, Tim. Earlier this week, I shared with the audience an op-ed piece that appeared in the Wall Street Journal.
Mm-hmm.
The headline was, Biden Weakens America's Global Clout. And I'm just going to read the first two paragraphs here to you. With Niger's gross domestic product at a miserable $545 per person in 2022, the United Nations ranks the landlocked country as one of the five least developed nations on the planet. Over the weekend, last weekend they're referring to, Niger's government responded to American accusations that it was negotiating to sell uranium to Iran by ending military cooperation with the U.S. The decision is another win for Vladimir Putin's effort to extend Russian power, a welcome boost to Iran, and a serious blow to America's plans for combating the return of jihadist violence across a swath of Africa.
Right.
What's your take on that?
Well, it's not terribly surprising. We have a large, or we had, a large counterterrorism force in Niger. But frankly, we accused the folks of Niger of engaging in an underhanded uranium deal with Iran. If you remember, about 2 months ago, I was on here about Iran and the fact that they're trying to build a naval base in Venezuela.
Right. Yes,
probably,
I recall
probably
that.
Probably are going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no question in my mind that Niger, which has this low, very low, income level, they certainly welcome it. So we accused them of dealing underhandedly with Iran, and the Iranians told us to go chase our tails.
Mm-hmm.
And so that says something about how strong the U.S. is perceived to be and how likely we are to follow through on our threats.
Mm-hmm.
The Iranian leadership, the Nigerian leadership just simply told us literally to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And that anybody representing the U.S., so this would not apply to tourists, but anybody representing the U.S. is on Niger territory illegally. Well, you know, back 30 years ago, this would not have happened. Why? Because, the U.S. in those days was a better friend than an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the way it is anymore. Mm-hmm. Because Niger, poor as it is, can go to Iran. They can go to Russia. They can go to China. There are many other for those who say that Russia is bankrupt, that happens to be true. But the thing is they have a steady income thanks to their oil. Only about 30 nations are engaged with the United States in terms of the Ukraine. So as a result, once you're beyond the NATO orbit, we don't have many allies.
Yeah, this is true.
In the war with Ukraine. So as a result, Niger knows perfectly well that we aren't the only game in town.
Mm-hmm.
And the Chinese, with their Belt and Road program, which is a really important thing, is able to offer Niger credits, which it can't find any other place once it gets rid of the U.S. And, of course, Iranians will be happy to meet whatever term to get uranium. The Iranians will be happy to meet whatever terms Niger intends to impose.
Wow.
So this is not surprising at all.
What does that say to you when such a small country basically tells us to go to hell?
No, it's not, that tells us how weak we are. We're still the strongest economy in the world, and we still have the strongest military in the world. But what's happened is, as we have dithered, we have not had a clear leadership since Reagan. In fact, I think there was a Wall Street Journal article on this within the past week or 10 days. But since Reagan, we have not been. We have repeatedly gone in the wrong direction in terms of maintaining a warlike portfolio. I'm sorry to tell our listeners this, but the world's still a dangerous place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually getting more so because we are, by our continued refusal to look at the military realities of the world, and to be truthful, to some of the economic realities of the world, we have destabilized the world. And I want to take this one step further. We are spending money at a tremendous rate, trillions of not billions, but trillions of dollars. Well, the United States currency is the reserve currency of the world, but as we print more and more money without anything to back it, what happens is other nations are now acting as the de facto reserve currency. Mm-hmm. You'd rather have Chinese money in your vault than U.S. money.
Mm-hmm.
And people who say, inflation has dropped. Well, in a technical sense, yes. But in reality, over the last three, 4 years, we're probably dating back in the pandemic, we have had 21% inflation. You cannot remain the reserve currency and have that level of inflation. And by the way, if you deflate, you lose jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So this is we put ourselves in, sometimes for the best of reasons, we put ourselves into a not just a corner, but a maze. And I'm not sure that anyone knows what the key to this maze is.
Now, the message here is not that all the blame rests with Joe Biden.
Oh, no,
I mean,
a lot of this
happened before he became president.
Long before. I mean, you can go back to, well, look at George H.W. Bush. Read my lips, no more taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And then, 2 years later, he swings in the other direction. Well, when you do swings like that, for God's sakes, you're going to lose the confidence of the financial community.
True.
As you should.
True.
As
right.
you should.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have carved this erratic course. Other nations note that are destabilizing. And if you don't believe that, go look at the dispute between Texas and the United States over the border.
Mm-hmm.
So we are destabilizing in all directions. And I sit there, I try to stay out of these things, but there's no question that America is not seen as a stable country anymore.
All right, let's go to the phones. We've got a couple of people who have been on hold here for you. Let's start with Matt in Shillington. Matt, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning, gentlemen. Regarding our status as a world power, I want to zoom in specifically on Ukraine. A simple three-part question, Dr. Blessing. One, how concerned are our NATO allies that the U.S. will withdraw support for Ukraine? How concerned are you that the United States will withdraw support for Ukraine? And finally, what would you think will happen if we do withdraw support for Ukraine?
Well, those are tough questions. I can't speak to what our NATO partners are thinking about our reliability in terms of the Ukraine. I flat out don't know. But I do know that our NATO partners are growing weary of the whole thing, except for those who are on the front line, like Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, Poland, Romania, places
right.
like that.
Right.
So those folks who are among the weaker members of NATO are deeply worried about what our intentions are. Give me the second question again, please.
How concerned are you with what's going on in Congress? How concerned are you that we would withdraw support for Ukraine? And indeed, if we did, as a historian or a future looking ahead, what do you think will happen?
Well, I don't see how Ukraine can, and we could have someone on here who knows a little bit more about military and demographics than I do, but the reality is we are killing a generation of Ukrainians, the young men of Ukraine from about 16 up to about 55 are simply being wiped out in this war. And so, well, it's actually almost two generations mm-hmm. of Ukrainians are dying. So the question is even if we could give them supplies, can we support them? And at this stage of the game, I'm thinking it's getting more less and less likely. So as an indicator of how weak the United States has become, a withdrawal from the Ukraine would be a disaster. Militarily and in terms of foreign policy. So I think we may end up doing a de facto withdrawal from Ukraine, but since we can't supply them with ammunition, we can't give them the missiles to defend themselves with because we've run out of them. We may continue to give lip service, but we can't give them anything else. We can't give them something that you can offload off a boat and put on the front line. So we may be looking, and it will be a serious blow to America's reputation if once it becomes known, and it will become known, that de facto, whatever we may say, we just cannot supply a small country like Ukraine with enough weapons to defend what's a small border.
Wow.
So, yeah. Now, we're looking at a disaster here, and I don't see any way out of it. We just don't have the capacity, the industrial capacity, to continue to fight in Ukraine, at least at the level we have been fighting.
Matt, thank you so much. Appreciated the call today. Going to take a break here. Debbie and Richard, in that order, I will take your questions next when we return from this commercial break. Timothy Blessing, Dr. Blessing from Alberni University is my guest today, and we'll be back with more with Dr. Blessing in just a bit. Stay with us.
Yeah. serving Tamaqua, Pottsville, Pine Grove, and all of Schuylkill County. This is News Talk 830 WEEU.
I know I promised that when we came out of the commercial break, I was going to go right to the calls. Forgive me, Debbie and Richard, but some news has broken here that I'd like Dr. Blessing to address and then get his take on what that means. So what did you just see?
So essentially, Russia and China just vetoed a U.S. resolution in the U.N. calling for immediate ceasefire in Gaza. So what that means is Russia and China have decided to let Israel cook in its own juices because they're not getting an off-ramp, mm-hmm. at least not from the U.N.
Right.
But what that says basically to us is that we're on the hook now because we support Israel. So this is going to damage our reputation worldwide. And, of course, and that also says that Biden is going to be blamed, continue to be blamed, because he's a strong supporter of Israel. This is going mm-hmm. to divide the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
And if it divides the Democratic Party, then, some people aren't going to turn out to vote for Mr. Biden. I think they want to have Mr. Trump back in charge here. Why? Because Trump's divisive. And as a result, the reaction to Trump is going to be, if Trump is elected, the reaction is going to be ferocious. But even if Trump isn't elected, the reaction is going to be ferocious. So this is a win-win-win for China. They for China and Russia, they get to keep Israel on the hook, they get to keep Biden on the hook, and they can divide the United States even more thoroughly than we are divided now.
So if I heard you correctly, you think that Russia and China want Trump to be president
yes, sir.
This year?
Yes, I believe that to be true.
Wow. All right, let's go to the phones. Debbie's been waiting on hold for quite a bit. Debbie in Coatesville, good morning. Welcome to Feedback, Debbie.
Hello. Dr. Blessing's information is so extremely important. He should be in front of the House and the Senate, and they should listen to him, but they would never give him the time to do that. Now, from our Afghan withdrawal, the overwhelming border migrants, our low reserves of oil, the severe debt spending. How deeply do you feel we have to go before this country is in extreme, desperate trouble?
Nothing lasts forever, Debbie.
I know, but we all lived through the 1968 and 70s. I thought the Vietnam broke this country. This I have never seen in my life, and I read a lot of sites. This is overwhelmingly very desperate. And I don't feel it's Biden, Mayorkas, the other general. I don't think they can bring us out of this.
Well, as Bill has been indicating here, and I've certainly agreed with Bill, has been building since the days of Nixon and Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, Watergate. Carter was basically hamstrung as a president because of Watergate and because of Vietnam, to be truthful with you. Reagan's the only president in recent decades who could lead strongly, but that's because he was Ronald Reagan. It was a one-person rule, to be truthful with you. And we have really had a truly competent president, but that may be because you can't be competent in the present atmosphere. So I'm not looking forward to miracles here. And I think that people need, the old saying is we need to stop shouting and start talking to each other. Well, we need to stop shouting. I'm not sure we're going to start talking to each other, but we at least need to stop shouting.
Debbie, thanks for the call today. Appreciate you taking the time to do so. Let's go to Richard in Wyomissing. Richard, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Oh, good morning. Dr. Blessing, I was just wondering how much you feel diversity and demographic changes have led the Republican Party to turn away from democracy in the 21st century. I know after the hope of Carter, when Carter left office, Obama, mm-hmm. when Obama left office, the Freedom House Index rated the United States a score of 90. The index mm-hmm. usually, as you know, rates from 0 to 100, sure. with the 100 being the most democratic. And that was good.
Richard, we have very little time here. Get to your question.
Okay, my question is, do you feel that the Republican Party has turned away from democracy in the 21st century because, you know, they don't really want us to be a multiracial democracy, as Stephen Levitsky and Daniel Ziblatt say in their book, Tyranny of the Minority and How Democracy.
Okay, Richard, are you now? It. You said the Democratic Party. Did you mean the Republican Party?
One of the two major parties, the Republican Party, has turned away from democracy in the 20th century.
All right, let's get Dr. Blessing's take. Go ahead.
I want to give you some statistics here. In the 2021 race in Virginia, the governor's race in Virginia, where they elected the governor and the attorney general and the lieutenant general, the lieutenant general is a black woman, I believe from Jamaica, if I remember correctly, and the attorney general was a Hispanic I believe Cuban background. MAGA voters elected those two, and I can show you the statistics. Democrats voted against the black woman and against the Hispanic. Republican voters voted for the black woman and for the Hispanic. So the idea that this is racially, you know, certainly if you're out burning crosses, you're probably voting Republican. But having said that, is that this breaking down, this party's racist and that party isn't, and so on and so forth, that it doesn't, I can show you a ton of statistics which will show that what MAGA voters and Democratic voters are voting on tends to be more policy. We have more political involvement now than at any time since 1900 in the McKinley-Bryan race. That's the second time McKinley and Bryan faced off against each other. So to hold that one party is this and the other party is that is fundamentally incorrect, because it's not borne out by the statistics. It's not borne out by the voting results. So it's much more complicated than that.
Richard, thanks for your call today. I wish I could take any more calls, but we're out of time. And I did want to ask Tim before we ended today, Latin America. What's going on down there?
We simply have lost Latin America. Latin America is on the Chinese payroll, and there, you can look at Costa Rica, perhaps Colombia, Argentina. They're otherwise. Well, of course, Brazil, but Brazil is playing its own game. Mm-hmm. It's big enough to do so. Mm-hmm. But basically, Latin America right now is lost to us. And you can just look at our southern border and see how many people are getting out of Latin America. So we have a real disaster, which no paper on the planet is reporting on. And that's terrible.
Wow. Sounds like we could do an entire segment just on that.
Yes, we could.
Tim, thank you.
My pleasure.
As always, no, my pleasure for sure. Always love it when Tim Blessing is on with us from Alverni University. And I want to thank everybody who called in today. I wish we had more time with you, buddy. I really do. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with the final seconds of feedback on this Friday morning in just a bit. Stay with us.
That matter to me.
A new generation of talk. News Talk 830 WEEU.